present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello, it's good to be back after Bill Tidy bravely sat in last week as part of his community service. That'll teach him. Time to meet the teams now. On my right, the knockout duo Richard Ingrams and Andrew Rawnsley. And on my left, familiar headbangers Alan Corran and Martin Young. As always, we start proceedings with a cutting, today read by Catriona Young.
Salesman Andrew Grant bashed himself on the head with a sample to show its strength and knocked himself out. Yesterday, the 40-year-old marketing man was still off work from his business at Fareham, Hants, but said he was on the mend. The product he was demonstrating is a nutcracker with the brand name Tough Nut.
Bill Tidy probably knows what he felt like. We thank Mrs. Yeo of Plymouth for sending us that. Richard, who's got 18 months for getting his country to go straight?
Andrew, you're a chap on the groin.
It sort of sounds crime-wavish.
No, it's not crime-wavish. It's Martin Young knows.
500 days is your 18 months,
right.
And it's Mr. Gorbachev.
Quite right.
And an academician called Shatalin.
Oh. For 3 bonus points.
He said, we've got to turn it into a market economy in 500 days, which I reckon is about 18 months. Is that right, sir?
That's absolutely right. Totally right. It's Comrade Gorbachev. The Soviet Union's president for life for the next 18 months, and his sweeping new powers over the country by sweeping the old ones under the carpet. At the Supreme Soviet, the sovereignty of Tsar Mikhail was decided on a show of hands, which, at a signal from guards, shot up 2 at a time. And we welcome to the programme, but not a lot on your showing so far, Andrew Rawnsley. Your proper question now, Andrew. Who thinks their latest figures are criminal?
Oh, well, this is the crime wave.
It is the crime wave.
I was just answering that question one question ahead of when I should have been answering
quite
it.
Right.
Yes, it's the latest crime statistics, which yet again show that crime is reaching a record high and proving that Britain is no longer a nation of shopkeepers, but shoplifters.
There you go, there. Very good. It all concerns the Home Office quarterly figures, which reveal that crime is increasing at such a rate that it's almost keeping up with inflation. The Home Office are now saying that if the figures continue to increase, they'll have to declare crime an enterprise zone. And talking of crime, here's a couple who obviously didn't contribute to the figures.
2 teenagers who burgled a South Oxfordshire rugby club twice in a month were caught one morning at 4 a.m. after they asked police for a lift.
Well, thanks to crime spotter Edward Brooks of Henley-on-Thames for that. Martin Young, where did a loony, cockeyed optimist suffer an early attack of frost?
I think this must refer to Anthony Wedgwood Benn, the man with the huge shrinking name. He became Tony Benn, Tony Wedgwood Benn, Wedgwood Benn, Benn. I mean, he's going to be Tony B. And he went on the David Frost programme, so, you know, having done that, he deserves anything that happened to him. And what happened to him was that Ben called him a loony, cockeyed optimist. And Mr. Ben got very, very upset and said, no, I should be leading the world.
Yes, quite right. It was all to plug the new book entitled Tony Benn, 1925 to 1990, The Wilderness Years. In which he attacks the royal family, saying they hate the common market. Prince Charles is a tailor's dummy, and Her Majesty is such a hopeless ad libber that even the royal pardon is scripted. So to the announcement I'm obliged to make under the terms of the Geneva Convention, and now for Alan Corran, a piece of music.
Bring up your home, oh my God.
That was Elvis Presley, recorded last week. And the tune was Clean Up Your Own Backyard. Alan, who's trying to come clean about the effects of pollution?
This is Christopher Patton, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, got a vote from the audience.
Lack
as well
of response from anyone. Awful. Thank you.
There was a
rubbish supporter in the audience who deserves all he gets. Yeah, it's just this enormous book they've produced, which is about to be thrown into bins all over the country. And,
the Conservative Party is now committed to smartening things up a bit.
That's right. But it's not really, is it? I mean, they published this the white paper on green issues on recycled paper, but on closer inspection, the 350 proposals within it were all recycled as well.
Bonus point for that. And the question is all about the government's environmental white paper, or white with a tint of green, entitled The Common Inheritance, and printed on recycled paper, believed to be unrequested copies of How to Pay Your Poll Tax. And the scores at the end of round one are Richard and Andrew, 3, but Alan and Martin in the lead with 5. Okay. We open round two with an apology from the Department of Social Security.
Cedar House is undergoing essential repair work. This is involving very noisy drilling, which prevents staff from hearing telephone conversations. The drilling stops by 9:30 each day. So for the foreseeable future, the switchboard at DSS Gloucester will not open until 4:30 each weekday, except Friday, when the switchboard closes at 4 p.m.
Many thanks to Anne Isles of Gloucester for sending us that. Richard, who followed a royal prognosis to the letter?
Is this our little friend, Prince Charles?
Oh, yes.
And went off to France to stay with a mysterious lady in a chateau.
He's
the Baron de something or other.
He's in free fall. England's in free fall. Spiraling downwards.
Where the letters come into it, I'm not sure.
This is a very sad story of a man called Richard Colton, who is an orthopaedic surgeon. And if you're an orthopaedic surgeon, you rather hope that the great breakthrough is to have a royal patient who, after you've done your bolting and Durafix and stuff, gets up and walks about a bit. And because then you're made, and people beat a path to your door and say, while I'm here, would you have a look at my ankle? And he wrote to the Times, said, I've got this patient, and he's perfectly all right. He's marvellous. He's up and about, and all this rubbish in the press, but he's really wonderful. He's very good. He's feeling marvellous. He's terrific. And he wrote this long letter to the Times, basically saying, I'm a very good doctor. Meanwhile, Prince Charles
sure
rolling around
is
on the floor in the south of France.
Anyway, it is about Mr. C.L. Colton, a surgeon, treating the gravity-prone Prince Charles, whose curiously legible letter to the Times explained how His Royal Highness was on the mend, bearing up well, and would give his right arm to be playing polo again. Andrew, what's just the ticket for a seat in the wrong kind of court? Ticket caught the whack ball against catgut.
This is Wimbledon. Sort of Wimbledon, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And
my God, he picks up the clues well, doesn't he?
Yes, it's amazing what they do in these tickets.
Yes. What do they do, Richard?
it all refers to new rules adopted by the All England Tennis Club at Wimbledon, which aim to make the reselling of tickets an offence punishable by up to 10 years umpiring John McEnroe. Let's take time out now for an advertisement seen in the East Cambridge Town Crier.
Dead trees kill. Don't kill yourself in your garden. Let us do it for you.
And thanks to Mrs. Rosemary Phillips for that. Martin, here's some heavenly music for you.
Star Trekking across the universe.
On the Starship Enterprise under Captain Kirk.
Star Trekking across the universe.
That was Star Trek in a Martin. Which generation will boldly go where Mrs. Whitehouse won't like it?
Well, I've been watching Star Trek since about 1943. And they've now decided that it's time that all those poor chaps bolted into whalebone courses. And, you know, and having difficulty actually speaking the words for the sheer pain, are sort of pensioned off. Therefore, they've got a brand new one, but it's probably a bit more risque than Mrs. Whitehouse would like.
On the contrary, they were wearing trousers. I mean, the thing about the future is that... The thing I always knew about the future is that women had good legs. I mean...
Barry, my colleague is getting too excited. Could you move on?
Yes. Well, I'll give you some sort of legible answer. It concerns a new sequel to the creaky clean Star Trek, The Next Generation, in which it's threatened sex will rear its ugly heads. If it happened in previous sagas, one wonders, where did The Next Generation come from? Alan Curran, your proper question now. What was favourite to lose at Doncaster?
Is this the nobbling case? The St. Ledger. It was a very sad picture. There was this horse coming down the final 2 furlongs with its tongue hanging out.
Quite amazing. Just make it to the Boucherie Cheveline. in time for Mitterrand's dinner. Can't remember the name of the horse, but it came fairly last.
Yes.
There was another one coming even more last behind it. And they got to that as well. It was a bookmaker's scam. It was part of the Enterprise Zone, as Rawnsley will probably remind us.
They shoot up horses, don't they?
Came with that. He brought a joke.
No, he didn't.
It's like a bacon cartoon.
Somebody has to.
Now that's better.
Touché.
I'll tell you, it was a horse called Bravefoot, which was allegedly nobbled at the Doncaster St. Ledger meeting after another horse, Norwich, was doped in an earlier race as a test stumble. Punters at the time claimed they knew something was amiss when stewards ordered a photograph of last place. Talking of last places, let me give you the scores at the end of round two. Richard Ingrams and Andrew Rawnsley, 5.
We've been doped.
Self-evidently.
Richard.
Alan Curl, Martin Young, 10.
Wow.
And with 10 legs ahead, it's over to Catriona for the start of round 3.
Corsica Builders, experts in loft conversions, extensions and decorating. Ever been let down? Try us.
And that was found in the Tunbridge World's News in Focus by Alison Beck. Richard, who can afford to lose pounds and pounds in the name of Hastings?
I think I'm going to know no answers at all.
It's another royal question, I'll tell you that.
Is it Diana slimming?
Yes.
Perhaps she's going to some little mystery. You know, Mrs. Thatcher goes to this funny woman off the Edgware Road.
Yeah, well, yes, and they pump this electricity into
That's
the bath.
Right, in the bath.
And you could always tell when you stand in the House of Commons whether Mrs. Thatcher's had rather too much voltage than normal.
Now then, where are we? Oh, yes. It's she who put the dye into dieting, the Princess of Wales, who wants to slim down to just the Princess of North Glamorgan. Royal Highness has enrolled as Sally Hastings at LA Fitness, a club conveniently close to Kensington Palace, so she doesn't tire herself out getting there. Now, Andrew, have some music.
Well, I wake up in the morning and I listen to the birdies singing songs I know already, and a few I haven't heard, and then I pull on my pullover and my trousers and my socks and shoes. Getting ready for school, school, school.
Andrew, what do kids consider the happiest days off of their lives?
Yes, this is some report, isn't it, into young people, as they're loosely called, and most of them told the people doing the survey that they wish they'd tried harder at school. And that also coincided with another very bizarre survey, which I didn't quite understand, which claimed that Zulus spoke better English than English school children. Perhaps you could explain that to me, Barry.
Well, I can't, but I'm sure Andrew Young can.
I just...
Martin Young, sorry.
I just...
One of them, almost.
Barry has
Zulus
a lot of trouble
with... Zulus
can
speak better than Barry Took, that's for sure.
Barry has a lot of
Andrew
trouble
Young.
with
Andrew
simple
Young
reading.
Was a Zulu, wasn't he?
I think he was, yes.
I
remember him well.
I can't even spell Zulu. How many O's has it got?
Lots and lots.
Sorry.
It does refer to the findings of a Maori poll in the Reader's Digest, which suggests that 70% of children wish they'd worked harder at school. The other 42% wish that they'd wish that they'd studied more during maths. The children's biggest worry appears to be paying their poll tax, closely followed by a nagging fear that they put their address at the bottom of the Reader's Digest questionnaire. Oh, dear. But at least they're alive, which is more than can be said for the writer of this A-level paper.
Death results in a staggering drop in IQ.
Well, that was spotted by the highly intelligent Mrs. Rowe of Market Harborough. Martin, your question. Why are millions behind the fall of America's number one son?
Ah, this could refer to President Bush. Yes, and the fact that there are millions behind the fall of his number one son.
No,
come on.
I'm going to pass it across. He's in the interest of fair play, as you're miles ahead.
Forward. This is Bush Jr., isn't George Bush Jr., who's been tied up in the savings and loan scandal, and it's all looking pretty bleak for him, really.
It all refers to the $200 million lawsuit against Neil Bush, the financier son of the president, concerning the spectacular failure of his Silverado Savings and Loan Association. Bush Jr., shrub to his friends, faced a Denver inquiry, accused... Thank you, better late than never. A Denver inquiry accused of gross negligence, failing to disclose dubious business relationships and several other presidential qualifications. Alan, who could have had their cake and smoked it?
Peacehaven Golf Club.
Yes.
Where a number of the members were seen falling around on the greens and giggling. And no one thought any more about it because they thought it was gin. But this time it was actually a cake.
Right.
And the bloke was fined 500 quid. I've forgotten his name. Sandy's. Name is Sandy's. Well, it was Sandy's trap. And Sandy's got this cake and he filled it with Acapulco gold or something. And all the rest of them just wandered around walking into flags and things. Normal day at most golf courses.
Right, that's absolutely right. You've got it all.
Did that.
It's all about golfer John Sands, whose contribution to his local club's Christmas party was a cake made of cannabis, duly eaten by all the guests under the impression it was made by his young daughter. The police were called, however, after several of the guests were discovered trying to climb down off the green. He may have been a little silly, but at least he's got a higher IQ than the next man.
Martin Hartley, aged 41, of Bradford, was jailed at Leeds Crown Court for 5 years yesterday for importing heroin worth £23,000. The drugs were brought from Pakistan, disguised as pornographic video cassettes.
Ooh, what a winner. And the scores at the end of round three are Richard and Andrew 10, but Alan and Martin still in the lead with 12. Catriona, will you open the last round for us?
A PC who filled his patrol car mistakenly with diesel expected a reprimand back at Banbury Nick. Instead, his inspector said accidents happen and let him have a diesel engine car, which he then filled with petrol.
Well, thanks to Beryl Sharp of Ivor Heath for spotting that one in the Daily Mirror. Richard, boogie on down to this.
Little bitty rock, little bitty roll, little bitty stomp called Snooty Rock and Roll. Little bitty, little bitty, oh-oh-oh, little bitty, little bitty, oh-oh-oh, little bitty rock, little bitty roll, little bitty rock and roll. You clap your hands in the air, sends a rhythm to your feet. You do the boogie woogie to the little bitty beat.
I didn't know he actually sang it. Screaming Lord Such, that is. And that's Luna Billy. Richard, the question is, where are the raving loonies coming to the aid of the party?
I think the chap from the Grawny had a better answer this one.
Rich is going to do his Andrew Rawnsley voice now. It's in a pub, essentially, because ever since the Monster Raving Loony Party destroyed the Monster Raving Loony Dr. Owen Party at the Bootle by-election by polling more votes than them, they're beginning to regard themselves as a rather serious party, and they're having their party conference, rather sensibly, I think, in a Golden Lion pub somewhere, is it down in the West Country? Do you need more?
No, that's quite enough for me. It's the political event of the week, the Monster Raving Loony Party's annual conference at Ashburton, Devon, under its depositless leader, Screaming Lord Such, the thinking man's Tony Benn. The party's press release concludes in a typical, stirring style.
Recent by-election results have indicated a massive swing to loonyism. If Dr. David Owen had accepted the invitation to lead our party last year, he would now be preparing for government.
Very good. Andrew, whose escort had the AA man call out the RAC?
This is somebody who broke down, isn't it?
Well, not quite. Well,
didn't Princess Diana broke down?
No.
At some point.
Just an ordinary chap.
Just an ordinary chap.
I'll tell you what about. No clues at all. It concerns an unnamed insurance executive who locked himself out of his Ford Escort in a Scarborough hotel car park. The AA arrived, spent 4 hours humming and hawing, and gave up. The husband of the hotel's proprietor, however, was a high up in the RAC, who apparently knew hundreds of men who can, and did, in 4 minutes flat. the AA has now applied for membership of the RAC. And we'll prolong the agony by pausing for a reassuring fact from Catriona.
The Institute of Health Services Management said it was not convinced that the lack of women in senior management roles was due to the fact that most managers were men.
No, they're probably monster-raving loonies. Thanks to John Wolstenholme of Sheffield for that. And Martin, what's the scientific approach to staying dry in the rain? Amazing story, this.
Scientific approach to staying dry in the rain.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me help you, because...
Please do.
Well, I will help you by passing you over to Andrew, who has the answer.
Yes, but this was something in The New Scientist, which I think was picked up, and this scientist has come up with this amazing idea that you stay drier if you lean into the raindrops. Though he does... he does accept, yes, you have to think about it a bit. He says you then only get the top of your head a bit wet, but it does get more difficult if you're trying to go sideways to the rain and running at the same time. Don't try this at home.
That's absolutely
right.
You
could walk around with a copy of The New Scientist.
Over your head.
Yes, it would probably be more effective.
Or stay indoors when he's about, I don't think. Anyway, it's according to Dr. Julian Vincent of Reading University, the mathematically correct method is to lean in the direction in which the raindrops are coming, as you say rightly, Sandra. Then only the top of your head suffers the deluge. He continues...
If it's raining from behind, walk forwards, leaning back as far as you can without falling over. Or walk backwards while leaning forwards into the rain. The faster you run, the further you have to lean forward. You may have to run leaning sideways if it's coming from the side. To get it absolutely right, you could practice running up and down the road and measure how wet you get, depending on the angle you lean and your speed.
All I can say is, does Tony Benn know about this? Finally, Alan, can you tell us the one about the Australian werewolf?
I was going to say Alan Bond, but it isn't Alan Bond. It's not the bees from Denmark, is it?
No. Bees from Denmark?
Is there a werewolf?
There is a werewolf. There's another dingo story. Down under.
Oh, it's a woman whose baby has changed into a werewolf.
No. Nope.
She told the court this, and she got off. It's an Australian werewolf, is there?
Yes.
I mean, there is something worse than Australian. I thought werewolves change into Australians when the moon is full.
Right. I'll give you a bonus for that, because that's great. But Andrew gets the answer, and he gets 2 points.
Well, this was the rare case, as Alan says, of an Australian who turned into a werewolf or appeared to have done and ran amok biting people, particularly members of his family, in all sorts of curious places, mainly down under, as I remember. But as it turned out, when the police arrested him, he was only drunk. He wasn't a werewolf at all. Very disappointing story, really, isn't it?
Well, you get it absolutely right, and you get 2 points for that. It all happened in Blaney near Sydney when police got a frantic call from a woman who claimed that her boyfriend had turned into a werewolf and was gnawing away at her brother, and would they hurry? Because he was then trying to eat her parents. They later arrested a 26-year-old man they found crouching in his car, growling and hissing. And after waiting 4 hours for the AA, it was hardly surprising. And now we've reached the point in the programme where I say, Richard, what have you got for us? Have you got a cutting to amuse us?
Well, after my tasteless reference to dead cats last week, somebody sent in this very good advertisement from America. It says, made of huggable grey, easy care plush material, Earl the Dead Cat is a novelty gift. Designed for people who like no-maintenance pets. Would you like to hear more about this, dead cat? It's very good. Earl does not eat, shed, wander off, fight with other pets, or answer when called. This stuffed caricature of a dead cat, slightly flattened... features a protruding tongue and crosses for eyes and comes with its own death certificate.
Cutting of the year. Cutting of the year. Wonderful.
Now you know what I want for Christmas.
$8.50. You'll get one. Andrew, what have you got for us?
This is a report from the Daily Mail, which has been reporting on that visit, which you may remember, of the three Labour left-wing MPs who went to Baghdad to see if they could talk some hostages or any sense into Saddam Hussein. One of them was Ronald Campbell, MP for Blythe Valley. Mr. Campbell, who met the Iraqi leader 2 years ago, said he has not got a good track record on human rights. He shoots people. He hangs people. That's a black mark against him. But I've heard he's very sincere.
Martin, what have you brought for us?
I like this one, which is from the Institute of British Geographers, who were meeting in Glasgow recently, and who learnt that alcoholism is most likely to develop in individuals who've grown up in homes with two lavatories and a budgie. And a friend of mine, Jim Cameron, sent me that, and he put on the bottom, "What a relief." I'd just like to draw your attention to a recent obituary in the Times. I don't want to, you know, draw a veil over the whole programme, but it's an obituary for Ratu Sir George Thakombau, who was a well-loved chieftain of the Fijian people. And he was a bit of a card as well. And it says in his obituary in the Times, he would remark to Scottish army officers on the similarity between the kilt and the Fijian military Sulu, adding that he, of course, had Scottish blood himself, his great-grandfather having eaten a number of Scottish missionaries.
And finally, we come to Alan. What have you brought?
I've got something. I've got to wave at the audience, Barry, just to show them that it really exists, because it's going to be one of those cuttings nobody will believe. The magistrates heard that a fierce struggle ensued, during which the constable's testicles were grabbed and squeezed. Fining him £30, the chairman of the justices, Mr. Alfred Playle, told him he should not take the law into his own hands.
And just in case...
Oh, well, I've got one here from the Croydon Advertiser. I think we can keep that in. I mean, you just squeeze that one in, couldn't we? Gave him down under, yes. Move along there, Constable. Now...
if you can.
Is it from the... Yes. Brought the tears to my eyes, that story. Now, from the Croydon Advertiser. To milk a polar bear, you first lure it into a meat-baited snare. Once in the snare, which does the beast no harm, you shoot an anaesthetic dart into it. Within 10 to 15 minutes, the bear is harmless. You can then milk it in the way you would milk any other bear.
Wonderful. Yes, well, you've fulfilled our duty to educate and entertain, Alan. Thank you very much for that.
Another one.
And I now have to give you the scores at the end of Cartus. A remarkable turnaround, because Alan and Martin have scored 13, but Richard, aided by Andrew, have scored a miraculous 15 under this week's winners. And we end with this letter written to the St. Lawrence Parish Magazine.
Dear editor, I'm worried that one of my neighbours is growing marijuana. She swears it's cabbage, but I'm not so sure. What do you advise? Worried of Vicarage Road. The reply reads, Dear Worried of Vicarage Road, my advice to you is to ask her if you can try some. Then, if you're still worried after half an hour, it's cabbage.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Andrew Rawnsley, Martin Young and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by John Langdon together with the producer, Diane Messias.